So one of the things that a lot of people have been doing right now with the pandemic and work from home is they've been doing a lot of projects. And most of the projects that I come across are usually related to their home. They cleaned out a junk room or they redid a room and gave it a makeover. And I was thinking, how cool would it be if we gave your cold emails a makeover? This week, we're going to go there. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 30,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so the thing that inspired me to do this particular episode was that this week I couldn't even hear myself think because everybody was doing all these projects in the neighborhood. They picked this week to run every piece of heavy equipment and chainsaws. They were doing all kinds of backyard projects. Plus, I've been seeing a lot of people posting about cleaning out a junk room and redoing different parts of the house and giving certain things a makeover and getting rid of all their old clothes and donating them to charity. You guys get the idea. And I thought, well, you know, what would be a project that you guys could work on as far as a business project that wouldn't take you a gazillion years and a lot of time and effort to do? So I've put together 8 super simple ways for you to give those cold emails you've been sending a makeover. Now, this one comes with a warning. And the warning is this, and if you've been listening to me for a while, you know this is kind of how I roll. There will be at least one or two of these that you might be inclined to say, well, duh, everybody knows that. But I have a rule when it comes to duh and sales 101. If it's duh and I'm already doing it, and if it's sales 101 and I'm already doing it, okay, you've got the right to say duh. If it's duh or, well, that's sales 101, that's basic blocking and tackling, Castain, sort of stuff, and you're not doing it, well, then you kind of have to shut up and do it. So that's going to be our little pinky promise right now. So with that in mind, why don't we jump in? The very first way that you could give your cold emails a major makeover, actually, would be, and hear me out here, doing research, some basic research before you send the email. Now, there are most people when it comes to pre-call planning research, they will engage in that when they are picking up a phone to call someone. But emails, most people wouldn't even think of that. A lot of people don't even bother with it. They either just go grab one of their templates, or they're thinking about what they're going to say as the fingers are going toward the keyboard. Not the best way to have the highest quality message coming across. And considering just how noisy the channel of email is, we really want to improve the quality of it. So when it comes to research, I just want to point something out to you because there are a lot of things that you could do with research, and you could easily become a full-time research analyst instead of a sales rep. So a lot of the people who are avoiding doing research, I hear you and I feel your pain. It's because you want to have an element of quality or quantity rather. I'm sorry. You want to be able to get some shit done. I fully get that, and I've been there. But we have to work on the quality of the message, and one of the first ways we can do it is to do a little bit of basic research. Now, before I tell you the direction that I would recommend that you go with your research and a quick way to do it, I just want to point something out. I don't even know why I'm using this as an example, but if you've ever taken algebra, for example, there are some basic building blocks in algebra that you really have to get down in order to go on to the more advanced stuff. And to me, this research component here is very, very important also, because the other things that I teach you today are just not going to happen if you don't do step number one. So one of the things that I would recommend that you do when you're researching is to look for trigger events. A trigger event is something that's going on in your prospect's world that could dramatically increase the probability of them needing your product or service, especially right now, right? That they would need it right now, that they would have a higher sense of urgency to hear you out, at least right now. So some examples of trigger events could be a company that's hiring. And by the way, as here in the US, the country starts reopening, you're going to see a lot more companies hiring. Now, why would that be a trigger event? Now, not for all of you, but as we say in New York, some of you's guys, right? I don't talk that way, but some New Yorkers do. But, you know, that might be a trigger event for you, because companies then that are hiring might have growing pains. They might need certain things with their infrastructure. They might need certain things to support them. Now, for me, being a sales trainer, that's a huge trigger event, because especially the hiring sales reps, guess what? They have to be trained. They need to be ramped up as quickly as possible so that they're really not a liability to the company, especially coming off of, you know, all the craziness that we've just had the last few months, and in many cases a loss of income for the last few months for many companies, or at least revenue being down substantially. So hiring could be one. Any kind of online reviews, especially ones that are not good. Whenever you come across a company that has experienced venture capital funding, a company that is launching a product, companies that you realize or you found out, and there's ways to do this, by the way, that they want a deal, they just want a contract or whatever. Again, that could be a huge trigger event. Anything in terms of PR news releases, as the world starts reopening and events start happening again, announcing an event could be a trigger event. Any kind of this, and this next one is a huge one, things going on, not only in their industry, but with their competitors. One thing I want to point out is that people at the C level have gotten there because they have just, they're highly competitive types of people. So I want you to realize that. So if there's something that's going on with their competitors, we want, and we're going to talk a little bit about that later, and one of the points that I want to make, this whole need, you know, this fear of missing out, the FOMO factor, that plays into it. So that could be a huge trigger event. So there's a lot more things that we could add to the list or whatever, but for now, I just want you to think of those. So what are some things that are going on? Oh, and before I forget, let's not forget that we're living in probably one of the biggest trigger events of the last few centuries, or at least the last century anyway, a pandemic. You know, things that are going on in the news, changes in legislation, these are all trigger events. Okay, so that's the very first one. But there's this whole idea of, well, geez, Castain, I don't have 3 years to do any research. So I always talk about this this concept called the 3x3 rule. I wish I was a genius that came up with it. This gentleman by the name of Steve Richard came up with it, the 3x3 rule. The 3x3 rule is as follows. You set your timer on your smartphone when you're about to do some research. You're going to set it for 3 minutes. That's your first three in the 3x3. The second three is you now have this goal of trying to find, inside of 3 minutes, three things that you might be able to use, especially, again, a trigger event in your research. Now, a few things I want you to realize. When you're doing this all the time, because you're sending quite a few emails, you're picking up the phone, you could use the 3x3 rule there. Maybe checking on a client or whatever, the 3x3 rule can be utilized there as well. When you start doing this, you get good at finding things quickly. You're not leaving a lot of time to dick around. So that 3 minutes adds urgency to it. And it also has a start and finish, so you don't get sucked into some researching vortex. So again, 3 minutes with the challenge of three things. Now, I want to point one other thing out. Unless you are an absolute rock star, you are very rarely going to make a sale on the very first email that you send out or the very first cold call. So what happens here is that you're doing the research in 3 minute bite-sized pieces. So I try to reach out to you with an email. I do the 3x3. No response. Well, I've got a note to do the next touch in the cadence, maybe in 48 hours from now, maybe in a week from now, whatever. I'm going to do the 3x3 rule again. So if you think about the average length of your sales cycle, and now you start thinking about how many times you're going to attempt to get in touch with them, or how many times you're going to be working this 3x3 rule, and you'll see it's quite substantial when you add it all up, okay? So that's number one. And number one, again, Captain Obvious, we can all say, duh, of course you're supposed to research. A lot of you just don't. Seriously, a lot of you would be very quick to do it on a cold call, not on an email, but it is absolutely critical if we're going to go on with these other steps. So now we go on to item number two, your subject line. So if you want to give your sales emails a makeover, make the subject line about them instead of making it about your product, your company, etc. Now, let me explain this one to you. One of the things, and I've done this any number of times, and I feel like it was so long ago when we were all traveling and meeting in large groups and everything else. And I just realized back in the day when I used to train in kind of a live audience type of thing where we did an on-site training or whatever, I would put the question out there. And I would say, you know, what subject lines do you guys typically use? And one of the number one subject lines that I hear, I've done it over on my LinkedIn group as well, people have given me this feedback, is they would either put the name of their own company in a subject line. In my case, it would be Castain Training Systems. Now, before I tell you what the other one is, let me just say it for you. What would you possibly give a shit about Castain Training Systems? Even if you knew of me, and some of you have been listening to me for a while or whatever, I mean, still, even you guys who know me and know that that's my company, what would you really give a shit about Castain Training Systems? Is that enough to make you say, hey, I'm going to stop. I'm going to really read this email. This seems like some important stuff going on. No, who cares about it? And it's awfully self-centered. But then the other one that I hear a lot of is they put the name of the prospect's company and the name of the sender's company. So let's just say you work for ABC Company. So the subject line would be ABC Company and Castain Training Systems. Again, it's first of all, it's incredibly typical, just so you know. Don't forget, guys, not only am I out there selling, but I own a business, Castain Training Systems. I'm on the receiving end of a lot of sales emails. I get that one regularly. There's nothing about it for you to say, oh, wow, this looks different. Let me click on this email instead. So now what you're going to do instead with the subject line is make it more about them. Well, how do you make it about them? Go back to that research. The whole point of research is to find something relevant. And I want you to really let that soak in. The point of research, it's not just doing your homework, being a true consultant. No, it's so that you are relevant to someone who's gotten really good and really fast at deleting irrelevant shit. So that is the point of your research. And also, so that the rest of that email now can be incredibly relevant. So the subject line, now we're going to make it about them. So let's just say in my research, I found out that you're going to be relocating to the Northeast. I could put something about that in the subject line, couldn't I? I mean, you're going to care about that at a much higher level than something about me or my product. So I want you to think about that. Now, the other thing, what if I did some research and I realized, and what I found in the research was that there was some interesting things going on in your industry? Well, I can allude to that in the subject line. See, an interesting thing about trigger events that I want to go back on very quickly is that, especially if you're dealing with the C-level or especially an executive team that you're dealing with, if it's a trigger event, depending on the severity of the trigger event and the importance of the organization, these are things that are talked about quite a bit at the C-level. Trigger events are talking about that relocation. They're going to be talking a lot about it. Mergers and acquisition. They're going to be talking a product launch. Forget it. They're talking about that for the better part of a year. So again, you come in now with messaging that addresses something highly relevant to them, and you're leading right off with that. You're going to get their attention. You're going to have that email opened and read. And that's our first priority, by the way, to get the damn email opened. Because the open rate right now, it's pathetic. On a good day, by the way. On a good day. And this is according to Constant Contact. Also, MailChimp has put out similar results. But on a good day, about 79 to say 82% of the emails that you are sending are not even opened. And I don't mean people who know you. They're going to open that. Coworkers are going to open it. But I'm talking about cold emails. So to me, the first line of defense is going to be that subject line. We've got to hook them at the subject line. So again, using that research, make it about them. The next thing now, and this is the next thing that is going to determine if your email is even opened, and it's the preview text. And it's also known, and it has a few different names, but another name for it is pre-header, I believe. And what that is, it's the little bit of text that just kind of gives you a preview of what that email is going to be about before you click and open it. And I got news for you. All of us use that feature. We don't just open up an email. We look and we see if it's relevant. Remember, imagine for a minute. You're a busy decision maker. You're at the C-level or whatever. You're just a busy person even. And you're getting a ton of emails each and every day, probably more so now that we have the work from home thing going on. And, you know, it's just a higher volume, but it's a really noisy channel. In fact, just to give you an idea, according to, this is one of my pet statistics, according to Radicati Group, the average person sends and receives 121 emails a day. But that's the average person. That's not even a decision maker. It's not even during challenging times in a pandemic. So, you know, chances are it's probably a little bit north of 121 emails a day. But when you're dealing with that kind of volume, you get really good at deciding what you're going to read and how much time you're going to spend on it. So again, we want to get you through the first checkpoints, and that's going to be getting the email open, starting with the subject line and then the preview text. So now, really the secret to the preview text is basically in the body of the email, because that's what's going to show up, right? You want to lead with something relevant, something about them, something from your research, instead of the typical nonsense, the typical way your competitors, hey, by the way, you don't see it right now, folks. I'm raising my hand right now. I was one of the people that used to do this. I think we've all been guilty of leading an email off with something about our widget and our company. You kind of open up the email, and then you're saying something like Castain Training Systems is a full service, blah, 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 or something about, wanted to tell you about our new X1000 series. Again, that's something about me, something about my widget, something about my solution. And it's also incredibly typical. You might even argue incredibly salesy too. So we want to get away from that. So instead, if we lead with something from the research, do you see why I emphasize the research? Because if not, our subject line wouldn't be relevant. Our preview text, it would flunk that. And therefore, really, the whole opening of the email would be lame. And also, do you guys think it's possible that people are making a judgment based on the subject line, based on the preview text, based on the first few sentences, maybe 1 to 2 sentences of an email. I think they do. I know I do. I'm sure you do too. So that preview text is very, very important, and you want to lead with something about them and their world. So that's something you can, and by the way, there's a lot of different ways to lead off an email, and if you've been following me for a while, one of my favorite ways to start off an email after I do my greeting is to say something along the lines of, I noticed that, and I tell them what I noticed in that pre-call, you know, planning research. And then what I do after that then is I kind of underscore that somehow and offer a compelling reason to meet based on that trigger event. It changes the whole dynamic and the trajectory of an email when you do that. The next thing that I want you to do in terms of giving an email a makeover is pay attention to the length of the email. Because when people open up an email, again, they've gotten very good at scanning and going quickly. And let me ask you guys something, and you can't really, if you answer, see, you're at home right now listening to this probably. So if you answer out loud, nobody's going to think you're like crazy. But if you were in an office, I would advise against answering me out loud. So what I want you to do is I want you to really think about this. If you open up an email and it looks like War and Peace, you're probably going to say, ain't nobody got time for that. And you're just going to move on. I know I do. I don't have time to read a War and Peace email or even one that's, you know, 25% of the length of War and Peace. Who the hell has time for that? So a good rule of thumb that I want you to think about, and this came from a study that was done, I believe it was by Constant Contact, and they studied, I think it was 2 million emails or so. So they just really had a good sample size there. And they found that the emails that were 200 words or less, 200 words or less, just fared much better than the other ones. So I want you to think about that as a good rule of thumb. Look at the length of the emails. Try to keep it under 200 words or less. And I wouldn't recommend what I'm about to say for every email, but just to kind of change it up a little bit, I also think it'll help you become more concise with your communication. But Guy Kawasaki and Daniel Pink were talking about this concept a few years back of the 3 to 5 sentence email. So that might be something for you to think about too. Again, I don't know that I would do that in every single email, but if you want to change it up a little bit, kind of offer a bit of a pattern interrupt from the typical lengthy email, consider doing a 3 to 5 sentence email every now and again. All right, that brings us to the next thing. Remember now, we're kind of visually scanning through the email to see if it's something that we want to continue reading. So not only are we looking at the length of the email, but here's something that a lot of people don't know. If you want to improve your email, consider using, I call them speed bumps. Consider using speed bumps. Speed bumps are things visually inside of the email that when somebody's scanning, make them put on the brakes and stop and go, wow, what is this? So let me give you some examples. I mean, putting something in bold, putting something in headline text, using bullets. We, in fact, there's one of them, I think, it was like in emails 101 when we studied that. The PS is another thing that we can put in there. But this next one is something that whenever I teach to people, I always see the heads tilt. Because it's like, wow, I haven't heard that one before. And it's actually pretty powerful. And I call it anomaly, the use of anomalies. And what this is when you have something visually that almost doesn't go there. So a form of an anomaly, and this is not really the main point of it. I'll get into that in a second. I mean, one form could be like an avatar or something like that. But again, I have a better way that I do it. What I do, I use anomalies a lot of the time in like a call to action. If I'm going to put click here, What I'm going to do is the entire thing, click here. I'm going to put it in bold so it's a speed bump no matter what. But the word click, I'm going to do all lowercase letters. But the word here, I'm going to put in a, use the anomaly. And I'm going to go uppercase, lowercase, uppercase, lowercase. So if you wrote that out on a piece of paper, and I'm guessing you're not in a car, so it's probably safe to do this, write the word here with upper, lower, upper, lowercase letters. And you'll see, wow, that looks a little bit different. You could even further the anomaly by italicizing it. So that, again, that's something, the whole point of it is so that it does make the brain go, whoa, what is this? What the heck? I almost said the F word there, but you guys get it. That's how my crazy brain would talk to me. It would probably say the F curse, but not on this podcast. So the next thing that you can do to give your email a makeover is use potato chips throughout the email. Now, what the hell are potato chips? Well, potato chips are things that we use to make people hungry. You can't eat just one. We don't want them walking away with a full belly. We want them saying, hey, feed me, dude. Give me some more here. So what are some potato chips that you could sprinkle throughout the email? Well, one of them could be, how about industry intel? Alluding to that. And again, when I say industry intel, I don't mean that you're going to go and take confidential information from a client and call up a prospect and say, hey, I've been working with ABC company and boy, I have some stuff to tell you. I'm not talking about that. I mean things that you've learned about the industry, some information that is perfectly fine to share with them. Again, C-level, they care what's going on. The whole concept of FOMO, fear of missing out, can be considered a potato chip. There is a tactic that I've taught in a lot of the training, especially when we get into the email training, and it's called the Little Bighorn. And it's actually taken from that movie, The Social Network. And they alluded to this tactic there when Mark Zuckerberg, in this one scene, was meeting with the guy who started Napster. And the guy who started Napster was saying, you guys are really taking off. This is back when he was still at Harvard. You guys are really taking off. You guys are kicking ass. Tell me, like, what are you guys doing to make this all happen? And they explained this tactic, how what they would do to get one of the bigger universities is they would sell all the surrounding universities that were smaller, less prestigious, the colleges, the community colleges and all. Then they'd call up the university, the Princeton, the Fordham University. And they would say, oh, by the way, you know, not only is this thing catching on, but, you know, here's what's going on over at Yale and over at Harvard and whatever. They're on board, as well as about 20 other community colleges out in the tri-state area. And what happened was, is that the guy from Napster then said to Zuckerberg, ah, the Little Bighorn, brilliant. And that's, I looked it up. I was thinking, wow, is that a thing? I looked it up. And sure as shit, it is a thing. So the use of the Little Bighorn technique, how there are other people maybe on board with a technology or with a solution or with some of the ideas that you've been putting out there to the marketplace. People are generally prone to want to know what the competitive environment is all about. So that could be a very good potato chips. Also, the other thing could be, you know, having an idea that you want to share with them or hinting at a result that you might be able to get from them, especially results. I really want you to think about this. Results that are extra meaningful right now. I mean, these results that I would mention would be meaningful anytime, but I really think that they're more meaningful now. Things like generating revenue and, you know, doing more with less. Things that improve morale, things that improve reputation, or especially improving consumer confidence in their brand, things like that. So, you know, those are some things that you can do with potato chips throughout the email. The next thing, this one is really, really important. Be able to answer, or your email should be able to answer the question, who says so besides you? Who says so besides you? Because the thing of it is, this will shock you. This is going to be shocking, what I'm going to say to you. A lot of people don't trust us. I know, right? It's who would have thunk it? A lot of people don't trust sales reps, including other sales reps, I bet you. So we've got to be, I mean, they feel that, well, you're saying it because you're paid to say it. So what we want to do is be able to, in that email, answer, well, who's saying so besides yourself? And how do you do that? By providing facts, referencing actual studies. I mean, not studies have shown, or if you're an Anchorman fan, scholars have maintained. You know, it's science. None of that shit. I mean, specific stuff. According, remember before when I mentioned about how many emails are sent each and every day? I believe, now I'm thinking, holy shit, maybe I didn't do it. Well, if I didn't, it's the Radicati Group, by the way. If I didn't, I'm going to be really upset because my whole point with this shit just then. But also, too, when I was mentioning, there's something else that I mentioned. It was, I know what it was, the length of the email. I referenced Constant Contact when I was talking about the open rate and how many, you know, the fact that about, was it 79 to 82% of the emails that are sent are not even opened. Well, I referenced that both Constant Contact and MailChimp have put out different forms of research to underscore it. See, it's a lot more credible when you do that instead of just throwing some sketchy thing out there that kind of looks like you pulled it out of your ass. So you don't want to do that. But also, of course, data. Actual examples. This next one is absolutely huge. The use of social proof in your emails is a big thing. How about a before and after picture, right? That could be quite convincing. An embedded video demo. Because right now people can't come to the demo. Why don't you bring the demo to them? And even under great circumstances, you can't go and carry that 10,000 ton piece of machinery to your customer. So you're going to bring it to them with an embedded video demo. You could do something like, and when I say that, I don't mean like a full, you know, full out demo. No, I'm talking, again, getting back to the potato chip thing. Want to make them hungry for more. So how about a nice little 59-second version where you're featuring something that you know might be very important to them, or you're talking about something that you know is very important to them and relevant to them right now? Why? Because you did your homework. Why? Because you found the trigger event. That kind of thing. And then the last but not least, actually I have two more things for you. But sort of last but not least, you know, I think it's very important, and I've talked about this before, that all of our communication, everything we do, whether it be a phone call or we're doing a demo, this podcast, for example, certainly any emails, anything like that, it has to pass, I call it the kitchen table test. The kitchen table test is really, how do we make our communication more conversational and less marketing and less sales speak? So what the whole concept of the kitchen table test is, it has to be something that you would say to somebody, having a cup of coffee or a beer at the kitchen table. That's how we make it conversational. And I mean, if you really think about your kitchen table conversations, do people talk about things like, well, you know, we're a full service company, we're a one-source solution? Well, you know, the best thing about our franchise is that you're in business by yourself, but not for yourself. I mean, who talks that way? Seriously, who the hell talks that way? They don't. This is why a lot of communication crashes and burns, because it fails the kitchen table test. So make sure before you click send, read it out loud. And just make sure that it flows and it's somewhat conversational and something that you would say in a conversation and not marketing speak. And now the last but not least portion of the podcast. I have a need to say this right now. I think that all of our emails need a makeover right now, because first of all, a lot of people are still using the templates that they were using all along, and it could really rub people the wrong way if you have a template that's talking about their goals for the year and how are things coming along. I mean, it just almost looks like you're oblivious to the fact that, you know, there's been a shitstorm for the last 2 months. So that's something that you might want to be careful with. You want to look over that stuff anyway, but also a lot of you guys have switched over to a lot of messaging about in these uncertain times and these unprecedented times, you know, things like that, and work from home tips. The work from home tips went out of style about the same time as all these stupid screenshots of Zoom meetings went out, and that was about 6 weeks ago. Seriously, it's, you know, people are over the novelty of working from home. If they don't have it figured out now, I mean, seriously, it's 2 months in. Unless you have something that would be an absolute revelation to people 2 months in working from home. But also, too, it's like the world does not need another in these uncertain times email. And if you think I'm kidding how overdone this is, if you want to do an interesting exercise with you, with yourself, and also with your sales team, because collectively, I think it's going to be even more dramatic, go through your inbox, your personal inbox. I would, unless you're a decision maker, then go through your business and your personal inbox. And little search bar that's there, search those phrases, you know, or particular, in particular, in these uncertain times, in these unprecedented times. Or you could just put uncertain times, unprecedented times, and watch how many emails come up. And then realize that the world really doesn't need another one. So that could be reason enough there to kind of change it up and change up the flavor of your email. Now, there's obviously a lot more we could have talked about today. We could really have gotten into changing up the flavors of your email. But I really wanted to make this 8 very simple things that you can do. None of these require that you have a PhD in cold email tactics. It's easy enough stuff to do, but they can make a world of difference, especially once we get that email opened and people start hearing you out. Now, just to let you know, we're going to be talking more about emails in a webinar that I have coming up on June 11th from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And what I did was I've designed an email webinar that's going to be talking about tactics that are appropriate during COVID-19. We're going to be talking about ways that you could change up the message and balance between giving value and being kind, and, you know, be able to get paid for a living too, right? That's nice. There's a balance that we have to have, how to change up the flavor. We're going to talk about, in fact, I'm going to be sharing 10 different email templates that have been written specifically for approaching somebody during COVID-19. If you'd like to learn more, and I'm hoping that you do, go to yoursalesplaybook.com/awesomeemails, all one word, all lowercase letters. yoursalesplaybook.com/awesomeemails. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come visit our blog at yoursalesplaybook.com/blog.